We have five cases on our calendar this morning. Our usual diverse mix. Two patent cases, both involving automobiles. Contract case from the Court of Federal Claims, government employee case, and a veterans appeal from the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which will not be argued, it being submitted on the briefs. So our first case is Auto Technology versus just about everyone, BMW et al. 06-1013. Mr. Gotta get organized here, all this paper. Mr. Baniak.
Good morning. I'd like to address an order today. Written description issues, enablement issue, and on the side, as I will call it, issue with respect to the grant of partial summary judgment. And as for CK's issue that Ray raises as far as the denial of its motion, I'm going to say on that score, there was no abuse of discretion by the trial court with regard to that motion based upon the Intel case, which we think is controlling, as well as on the material issues of fact that were presented with regard to that so-called cross-appeal, which we don't believe is a cross-appeal. Turning now to the written description argument, this case is not Gentry Gallery. We do not have a situation in this instance where this was the only possible location for the sensors as set forth in the patent and as set forth in the intrinsic record. It was not absolutely unambiguous on this point when you look at the specification.
Let me just ask you about that point. If we were hypothetically to construe the spec as requiring a sensor on the side door, is there a way to construe the claim to save the patent on the written description issue?
With respect to construing it on the side door, yes, I suppose you could save the patent, to put it in those terms, if you said it is to be so limited to just the side door.
You only suppose?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that that is a proper construction. I go to the at least one aspect, and I believe the district court was incorrect in what it said and how it construed at least one of in this case. It's not the situation that was presented in the Super Guy case. We here see in the intrinsic record very, very clearly that the applicants defined what it meant, what they meant, when they said at least one of, it was in the alternative, it was either or, and that's what they said in the specification, that's what they said
but
in
I think
the amendment.
As I understand, the other side doesn't disagree with you. the only difference is that they are saying that therefore it fails on WD because the spec requires that it be on the side door, and it doesn't allow for one sensor that is not one sensor that is between the wheels but not on the side door. Am I at least understanding what you understand the play here to be between the parties?
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct. And I think the joint defendants do agree with us on that particular point. But that's where the district court went wrong. That's where the district court failed to appreciate the part of the specification which specifically set forth that these sensors operate independently. I don't know that the court appreciated the fact that being set up in parallel and shown as shown in figure 4 in the related text, indicated and as set forth in the text, any one of those sensors
but look,
would be actuated claim, and set up the back.
The claim says at least one of a side door and a side between the centers of the front and rear wheels. And isn't that supported at column 3, line 44 et al., etc., et sec., which says to ensure the effectiveness of sensing, it is reasonable that more than one sensor be used. For example, one would be located just before the A pillar and one before the B pillar, which is between the wheels. And spec also says there must be, it is essential that there be a side door structure, a sensor in the side door structure. Isn't that supportive of the claim construction that I just read off?
Yes, Your Honor, it is supportive of that, but it's not determinative of that particular construction. If you look further at the objects of the invention, for example, and then you go into the detailed specification, what you see there is that is a one, that is one preferred way to do it, putting three sensors in there. In the objects of the invention, the inventors call out that you could have two sensors, not three, but two sensors as one objective, and they don't say where those sensors are necessarily located. It could be at the A pillar, could be on the C pillar in those cases. What's key here to us, what's key here is that even though the word essential was used in the context of the background of the invention with regard to these crash sensors, there is an embodiment. There is an embodiment set forth in here where a single sensor will activate this mechanism. And that's where we get to the claim language.
And where is that sensor?
That sensor can be in any one of those three locations, which are exemplary, or anywhere.
And there doesn't have to be one in the side door?
No, there does not have to be one.
The specification's a mess then.
Well, Your Honor, unfortunately, we are dealing here with a legal instrument, and legal writing, insofar as a patent is concerned, is considered to be one of the most difficult jobs.
I know, I used to do it.
Right.
But it's not that difficult when you use plain language, using the word essential. Why doesn't that characterize all the interpretation of the claims?
Because.
And my interpretation, in fact, would support your position, which somehow you're pulling away from.
No, I'm not pulling away from the position at all, Your Honor. I'm saying this specification does not require that a sensor must be located in the door in order to meet the limitations of these claims. That is because we set forth an example of where it isn't necessarily located in the door, and because, and I'm going to come back to the issue of essential here in a moment, and because the applicant said in the file, contemporaneous file history, our concept is broader than just locating it in the door, because we're dealing with physics and we're dealing with common sense.
In other words, we should ignore the sentence which says the opposite.
No, I don't think we should. However, the case law would support, if there's inconsistency here, then we can't be clearly unambiguous. It is not a clear disavowal.
Does the claim require that the sensor be mounted at all?
Yes, I think there is a
mount. What's it say? Means for?
Mounting. That's correct, Your Honor. There is a means
for
mounting.
So there has to be a means for mounting.
Correct. And therefore, there is a place to mount it, and that's what the applicants call out. This is the place. These are the places where it can be mounted. And again, file history makes very clear what the applicants intended by the use of that language. They did not want to be unduly restricted. Back to the issue.
Where's the example of one sensor not in the door?
You look at figure 4, Your Honor, and it shows a number of sensors, and then you go to the related text.
You look at figure 4, but that shows
three.
In both locations.
It
so
does. Right.
Two of them are on the door and one's on the side panel.
That's correct.
Is that one sensor not in the door?
That sensor is shown in the door, but we need to look at the related text, and the related text doesn't say that that sensor must be located in the door.
This is the related text.
I'm sorry, the related text is located in the specification at column 8, lines beginning at around line 18, where it says these places for these three sensors could trigger in a crash any one of those sensors going off. Any one of those sensors will do the job, not the one in the door. And when we go back to the use of this word essential, which...
I'm sorry, I can't hang a hard time. I'm on column 8.
Yes,
and I'm having a hard time finding what you just characterized as
these locations.
These locations
include
the center of the door, plus in front of the A pillar, and just behind, as shown in the figure.
Right.
These three sensors are electrically wired in parallel. If any of these three sensors triggers in a side crash, then the protection apparatus is initiated.
Well, that tells what happens. That isn't contrary to the statement that it is essential that one of them be in the side door.
And that's where the district court, I think, had a flavor, had the understanding of what the applicants were talking about in the background of the invention when they asked opposing counsel, isn't this a situation where we have to look at what was being said in the context of column 4?
Let me ask you about electronic sensors. There's no question there's a written description of that, but is it enabled? You just pull it off the shelf and put it in and everyone knows what an electronic sensor is, or recognizing that there's a lot of written description here, a lot of enablement material on mechanical sensor, shouldn't there have been an equivalent or at least more disclosure regarding the electronic sensor?
First, we look at the case law. The case law, I think, here is controlling with regard to spectrophysics and Invitrogen. Spectrophysics makes very clear, if I enable one embodiment of this means, then I have met the scope of the invention. We enabled one embodiment without question, admittedly, and that's the mechanical sensor.
Is that a concession that for the enablement disclosure, for the electronic sensor disclosure to be enabling, there needed to be more?
No, Your Honor, it's not. Because we submitted evidence, and this is all on summary judgment, let's remember. Summary judgment was granted on written description, summary judgment was granted on enablement. So we are dealing here with material issues of fact that have to be addressed, not just the question of is it the law. I think the law prevails in this particular instance for ATI.
Why isn't this obvious in light of Marsh?
It isn't obvious in light of Marsh, Your Honor, because
1927, you have an explicit reference to side impacts.
And what happened since 1927, Your Honor? Nothing. Nothing in the way of this kind of invention. Even the Schmidt reference that comes about in 1966. Nothing happens. Long-felt need is something that we submitted evidence on in the Dix declarations, and it was before the court. Long-felt need and the commercial success of these inventions. It was totally unrecognized what Marsh did. Marsh did not in any way represent an obvious way to do this. Marsh is located at the bottom of the car, for example, and Marsh is unprotected.
And drops a curtain, a chain curtain, to protect against glass shattering, but other than that difference, haven't we got something doing exactly the same thing, or something very close to the same thing?
No, not at all. I don't think it is.
What's the difference?
The difference is that, first of all, we have a limitation in the claims that's directed to a housing that goes around this. That housing also operates and cooperates with the particular inertial accelerometer that we're dealing with.
Why is that just incredibly obvious? I mean, to put a housing around it.
Well, Your Honor,
The detection system easily mounted and easily cared for.
It was the record before the court showed that it wasn't incredibly obvious to do that. That's why the court denied summary judgment with respect to obviousness.
Did I miss something, or was obviousness not decided and not appealed?
It's not even an appeal. In this particular instance, I'm trying to answer Judge Rader's question on that. So that issue isn't before us in this case. But I wanted to respond to what you said, Your Honor.
If we affirm on enablement, will you have some claims that are still left on the written description? We have to reach the written description issue?
No. I think if you affirm on enablement, then I think we also have an affirmance required on written description in this case. We have written description. That's why.
No. I'm saying affirming the district court. In other words, you lose the patent based on enablement.
No.
So if we affirm the district court, in other words, the claims that are alleged are not enabled, do we have to reach the written description? I tried to line up which claims were at issue on which issue. It seems like there might be a few that are still open on WD, even if we affirm on enablement, but I'm not entirely clear.
I don't believe that that's the case, Your Honor. I think an affirmance on either ground ends up with these claims all going down. But again, we're still dealing with a question here that is related to what standard are we applying, what material issues of fact were presented to the district court, and what did the district court then do with those material issues of fact.
Mr. Paniak, my sensor does tell me, it's not on the side, but it's in front of me, tells me that you're into your rebuttal. We'll save you a full 3 minutes. Mr. Gallo, you are sharing time, and you're going to take 12 minutes.
Correct, Your
when
Honor.
Your red light goes on, you're trading on your friend there.
I will stop.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ken Gallo for the joint defendants, Delphi and GM. Stated differently, I'm speaking on behalf of everyone other than CalSonic and Nissan. And I will address the two arguments, the written description and the enablement.
How can this be a written description problem when you've got figure 4 showing a side panel sensor, when you've got column 5 describing a combination with one sensor on the door, and column 8 again describing multiple locations, and there's description all over the place, and it's obvious to one of skill in the art where you might put these things. even when they're pictured. And then Wertheim goes along and says as well, use a flexible approach to this. Why aren't you using obviousness, which is where this thing ought to be invalidated?
Well, let me respond to that first. Why aren't we doing
obviousness? You've got a lot to respond to there, about six things.
But I think I can respond to those, Your Honor. First, we did argue obviousness in the lower court, and the district court, according to my recollection, came very close to invalidating on obviousness and did not invalidate because of the question of whether a housing was obvious. Obviously, we disagree with that. We didn't try to appeal that ruling because we won on written description and we won on the lack of enablement. Now, why is it that it's not described? I would make three points, Your Honor. We start with the proposition that the language could not be more unequivocal. The language here is stronger than the language of Gentry Gallery. When the specification says it must be in the door, must to be effective, and being in the door is essential. Figure 4 does not change that. The district court specifically addressed the figure 4 point, and the district court said, quote, there's nothing, said it says nothing of a single independent sensor. The description of figure 4 is three sensors, and it appears in the
Gentry Gallery, you didn't have a picture showing the embodiment which is located somewhere other than in the door.
But the textual language that accompanies that picture explains that there are three sensors. It's at column 8, lines 16 to 21.
Yeah, but as Mr. Baniak pointed out, that paragraph that you're referring to concludes if any one of these three sensors triggers.
Which doesn't mean, Your Honor.
And it talks about the locations include. It's talking about any of the locations.
It says one located in the door plus another in the A pillar and another behind the B pillar. It talks about them in the conjunctively, not independently. And then, Your Honor, Judge Gross, when it says that if any one of them, they can trigger independently, that doesn't go to the question of whether one located in the door is essential. In other words, the fact that the one in the A pillar can trigger independently or the one in the B pillar can trigger independently doesn't mean that the one in the door isn't still an essential device. And here's, I think, the most important point.
Well, assuming it's an essential device, the claim permits at least one in the side door, that's essential, and also from the side between the centers of the wheels. And why isn't that supported by the specification at column 3?
Because, Your Honor, it specifically says that the one in the door is essential. The claim construction that ATI asked for and received said capable of in the door and at locations along the side. And so it still is essential that it be in the door, so the second half of that claim construction...
It doesn't say essential, it says to be effective. You're talking about... But you don't have to have an effective invention, do you? You can have an invention that may not even be effective. So even if we overread the one statement that you're placing your whole appeal on, the fact that they said must instead of should or something, even that is further amended by the effectiveness language, which isn't essential for inventiveness at all.
It says two things, Your Honor. It must be in the door, and it is essential that it be in the door. It has both of those phrases.
Otherwise, it doesn't satisfy 101.
Exactly, Your Honor. And there's one very important point here that I need to make about the question of how you read Figure 4 together with the essential and the must language, which is that the expert opinion that was put in by ATI in this case did not even attempt to reconcile Figure 4 with the must and the essential language. In other words, one skilled in the art, Dr. Dix, came in and he said to the district court, look at Figure 4. But what the district court said was conspicuously absent from Dr. Dix's opinion, his affidavit, was any attempt to reconcile Figure 4 with the language which says it must and it is essential. So the ATI did not create a genuine issue of fact in the lower court. In other words, they had the opportunity to bring in someone skilled in the art and say, I can read figure 4 consistently with the essential and the must language. And they did not do that. And it was proper for the district court, in light of the must language and the essential language, which it is hard to imagine how you could use more unequivocal terms than essential and must. And then in the absence of any affidavit of one skilled in the art that actually attempted to reconcile those positions.
The claim itself only requires that it be capable of being mounted. Why are we spending so much energy here on where they're actually located?
The only
location language isn't even in the claim, is it?
Your Honor, I don't believe that our argument on written description requires the court to conclude that it must actually be mounted. I think the issue of actual mounting.
It just says capable of being mounted.
Right,
doesn't it?
And we say that that.
So there's no mounting requirement at all, is there?
Well, for the written description argument, the point I want to make is that we rest on the claim construction capable of being mounted, and we say that it
they're
is
claiming
not
a housing and a feature. They're not claiming where it's mounted, are they? And yet you're saying that's what invalidates the claim? It's kind of a stretch, right?
Well, isn't location key here?
Sure, it is.
And any sensor is capable as long as it has a frame or a flange and a hole for a screw.
Right.
But why it's probably obvious, but it's not a question of location having anything to do with the claim, is it? It's just capable of being mounted.
Well, there's two things. The claim, as construed by the court, said capable of being mounted in the door or between the centers of the wheels. The judge later said it also requires actual mounting, and I don't hear Mr. Baniak to be disputing that fact. So, Your Honor, I don't think it is true to say that it is just a sort of an academic question of whether it's capable of being mounted.
What about the electronic sensor?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I'll move it.
Is that off the shelf, or does that need real enablement description?
No, it absolutely needs real enablement description. And once again, I go to the record at summary judgment and the fact that there was no evidence put into the record by ATI to suggest that it was routine and that one of skill in the art could use something off the shelf.
Well, you have a figure 10, don't you? What is that?
Figure 10 is that response curve.
Why wouldn't one of skill in the art, electronics art, be able to look at that response curve and say, that's easy?
Let me tell you what the lower court record is on that. Dr. Hensler, who was our expert, put in an affidavit that said to try to program and to create an algorithm in a computer program in order to process that signal would require digital processing and a great deal of experimentation, that there was nothing available on the market that could do that, and it would take an enormous amount of time. There was no response on figure 10 from ATI's expert. So the district court was submitted with uncontested facts on figure 10, Your Honor. There's no dispute in the record on figure 10 in the lower court. But more generally, in response to Judge Lurie's question, the record shows that our expert, Dr. Hensler, put in a detailed affidavit. I would refer the court to paragraphs 10 to 19 of his declaration, which went through in considerable detail and explained, I've got 12 minutes, so I'm not running on his time. I was afraid I was in his time. A detailed explanation of exactly the fact that digital programming that would be required would exceed the capabilities of one skilled in the art, that it would take an enormous amount of time, that the off-the-shelf sensors that were available would not be able to process this signal. In response, there was a very conclusory statement from Dr. Dix, the ATI expert, which did not contest the essential underlying facts. There was a conclusion by Dr. Dix, but he didn't address the very specific points made in the Hensler affidavit. So again, the district court was confronted with a situation where there was no material facts in dispute about the question of whether it would require undue experimentation. And the district court said, in essence, Dr. Dix doesn't even characterize the nature of the work that would be required.
And so, if we agree with you on enablement, is there any reason to reach the written description issue?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor. I will say in candor to the court that the record is less than clear on that. The record could be read to say that enablement doesn't cover Claim 29. But I heard Mr. Baniak to say that that's not his position, and the record is less than clear on that. We believe if you affirm on either enablement or written description, the entire case goes out. But there was an open question about Claim 29 with respect to enablement. The record is not terribly clear on that point. On enablement, Your Honor, the point I would direct the court's attention to, of course, is that cases we cited, the Chiron case, the AK Steel case, the recently decided Libel-Flarsheim case.
And what about Invitrogen, which is the case that Mr. Baniak seems to be relying on?
Your Honor, I just don't think it's to the contrary. I think we are arguing for a very simple proposition of law, which is, and I'll explain why Invitrogen is not to the contrary, which is cited in all the cases I just identified, which is you have to enable the full scope of the claims. In this case, ATI sought a construction that included an electronic sensor. They got that construction. Invitrogen isn't contrary to that. Invitrogen just says you don't have to enable every method of practicing the full scope of the claims. In Invitrogen, the full scope of the claim was limited to genetic engineering, genetically engineered RT, and genetically engineered RT was in fact enabled. It didn't have this sort of multiple scopes of the claim that we have here, both mechanical and electronic. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallo. Mr. Fellhaus.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Fellhaus for Cross Appellants, Nissan North America, and Calsonic KSI. First, I'd like to say that we certainly agree with Mr. Gallo that the claims are invalid for lack of written description and for lack of enablement. Our issue relates to non-infringement. The claims were construed by the district court consistent with the SuperGuide case.
Well, you had a motion for summary judgment that was denied.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, normally, the case goes on, but here the patents were invalidated. Is this a final judgment?
This was a final judgment, Your Honor.
Was it held to be moot?
Our motion was denied, Your Honor.
It was denied?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which means the case theoretically could have gone on, but is that nullified by the holding of invalidity, which in effect moots?
If affirmed, we render our motion, our cross appeal, moot, Your Honor. Right. We understand from the typewriter case, Your Honor, that our position should either be taken as an alternative grounds to affirm the judgment below, or possibly as a cross appeal.
But as Judge Lurie mentioned, your case is still alive. I mean, assuming we were to reverse on the validity grounds, all you've been denied is summary judgment of non-infringement. You're going to go on to a trial, I assume.
That's correct, Your Honor. But in the typewriter case, that same position was taken as an alternative ground to support the judgment below. The reason that we cast our appeal as a cross appeal is because our non-infringement case does not relate to all of the defendants. And therefore, if you reverse the district court as to non-infringement for Nissan North America and Calsonic Kansai, the judgment below would then be modified. So we understand that our position should be accepted either as, I say, an alternative ground to support the judgment or as a cross appeal. And that's why we're here. But the typewriter case, I think, supports our position. And as I was saying, the basis of our position is that the district court required that the sensor housing be capable of being mounted both in the side of the vehicle and in the door. Calsonic Kansai sells sensors exclusively to Nissan. Nissan uses some of those sensors in side impact sensing systems. Nissan vehicles never have a sensor in the door. Nissan vehicles have no position to mount such a sensor in the door. The Nissan system doesn't work with the sensor in the door. Therefore, our position is that we're consistent with the patent. That is to say, we are inconsistent with the patent that requires a sensor in the door. The district court misapplied the case law of this court, including the High Tech Medical case and the Stryker v. Dabol case. The district court denied our motion because ATI had an expert modify our door, drilled holes in the doors, hung a sensor where no sensor could be positioned, and that is incorrect according to the case law.
Thank you, Mr. Feldhaus. Mr. Paniak has 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Briefly, with respect to what Mr. Feldhaus just said, as I said at the outset, Intel, I believe, controls Stryker, the case that he cites from the district court looked at and reviewed carefully, does not indicate a contrary result to the denial of the motion in this particular instance. There was no modification made whatsoever to what is claimed, and that is the sensor and the mount.
Looking at the enablement issue, is there any response to their expert's testimony that this would require undue experimentation?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I think the district court did not read Dix's declaration fairly. That goes to my point. We're on summary judgment. The judge should not be weighing these two declarations. He should be looking for issues of material fact. What do we see in the start of Penzer's declaration? He says, and he begins by saying that an electronic sensor may not have been available, may not have been available at the time. Dix starts out saying they were available at the time. And here's how someone would have easily been able to adapt it. That is his declaration from start to finish. Hensler never tested any of these devices. He didn't even know whether they existed at the time. He looked at this from the standpoint of a commercial embodiment, which CFMT says that's not the situation here. And I think the district court went into that. What we're also looking at is on the law itself, they cannot distinguish spectrophysics. On the law itself, we describe one means, all right? That is sufficient for purposes of fulfilling the enablement requirement.
You have to enable the entire scope of the claim. If there is an electronic scope, have you enabled it?
There's an electronic scope of the claim, which we're dealing with only two dependent claims in this particular instance.
Doesn't matter how many claims there are, you have to enable the entire scope of the claim.
I have one means, Your Honor. We have enabled the scope of all of those claims. I'm saying it's argumentative.
You're enabling a species and claiming a genus.
I'm claiming a broad claim in claim one, which encompasses many means. I've disclosed
electronic included.
Electronic in that.
How have you enabled that? Judge Lurie is correct. You've enabled something broader than a single mechanical species covers.
I don't think you can distinguish spectrophysics. Since spectrophysics says we have enabled the full scope of claim one by disclosing one means.
And we just explained all that in Leibel-Fleischmann, didn't we?
You did discuss that in that case, Your Honor. And I think Leibel-Fleischmann does support our position for the very reasons that I'm saying here. Leibel-Fleischmann dealt with the situation where you had this unclad version, and the unclad version was in any way, shape, or form disclosed in there. The means plus function is a very significant aspect of this case. We disclosed that. If I can continue, what we did dealt with...
One sentence. One key, fully loaded sentence.
I urge the court to read carefully what's in the background of the invention and the context in which these sensors are being discussed, because they're being discussed with regard to crush sensors, they're being discussed with regard to sensors which are considered to be essential, because that's one of the problems that was being faced by the applicants at the time. And it's clear, I think, when you get through that, that putting it in context, the word essential is not essential in this particular instance.
Thank you, Mr. Baniak. The case will be taken under advisement.